It feels like ages ago since I started reading Dante's Inferno from beginning to end for the very first time. In translation into English, I might add, by Robin Kirkpatrick and published by Penguin. And I thought, well, look, so far, in what seems since an age ago, I've got as far as the end of Canto 13. Now, there are 34 cantos in all, so it seems like a good place to do a little reflection. And the thing that prompted me to do a little bit of a reflection is something I've started to do very recently. I started Dante's Inferno reading no notes. Loads and loads of references in there, and I thought, I don't know what these mean, but let me just read the poetry and I'll get the overall story, and I'm not a scholar. And then a couple of cantos ago, I started to look at the notes in the back of the book. And that's when I realized that at one level, I don't understand Dante's Inferno at all. It's jam-packed with references to stuff, places that I've never heard, like recently read Cecina, it's a stream, and Corneto is a village in the swampy area on the borders of Tuscany and Lazio. Now, I would not have known that, and the idea that there's a stream and a village in a swampy area could well be important in terms of the overall meaning. But what I have been relying on, and what I intend to continue to rely upon, is my own intuitive reaction, if you like, to the English translation of Dante's Inferno. I emphasize the English translation because somebody contacted me online and told me that because Dante's Inferno was written in a particular type of Italian, I wasn't actually reading Dante's Inferno. But anyway, whatever Inferno I'm reading, the whole thing is jam-packed, and it leads me to think that to have a satisfactory experience reading Inferno, and reading for that matter any other poem, it is not absolutely necessary by any means to understand all the references, even the oblique references that there might be. It's not even necessary to understand who the characters are, because there's music in the words, you see. There's music in the words, and the reader, in this case me, can imagine what's going on. And also, a great poem will operate at two different levels. One is at the very concrete level, which doesn't require the person to have lots and lots of background information. And certainly when it comes to the symbolism and associations that there might be in the language, there is no need for anybody to be able to dissect that, to parse it, pull it apart and explain it. No, the poem can go straight to the heart. The poem can appeal in its own right as a piece of music, I would go so far as to say. Now, this isn't so much a reflection, I suppose, as a... Well, it is a reflection. I was going to say as a sort of me on my high hobby horse about it. Now, I'm about to go and read another piece of Dante, Canto 14. And I can tell by the introduction to it, for example, that there's the words written down, the blasphemers. So, we're going to find some people who have ended up where they are as a result of being blasphemers. And then Capaneus, well, I don't know who Capaneus was, the old man of Crete and the source of the rivers of hell. Well, I kind of can relate to the source of the rivers of hell. But then it tells me that between lines 13, and this is the only example I'm going to give, between lines 13 to 15, Cato the Younger crossed the northern Sahara in Libya during his campaign in support of Pompey the Great against Julius Caesar. Further references to Lucan's account, and this is somebody called Lucan, occur in Inferno 25. Anyway, all that is very well, but I would get nowhere with the Inferno if I was to plod my way through, reference by reference. Every time I didn't understand something, I guess I would be lucky to get four lines read of it. So I'm very happy to, you know, start with a line like, seized in pure charity by love of home, I gathered up those scattered leaves, then bore them towards my countryman, his voice grown dim. Well, I don't know what references there might be in there. All I know is that Dante is going on a journey being taken by Virgil. So the countryman is Virgil, Italian, well, ancient Roman, if you like. And old Virgil's voice was grown dim, whatever that means. But anyway, I just thought that is my main reflection. Otherwise, I am very pleased with the translation. It is easy to read, and it isn't full of loads of words that are strange to me. Lots of places, yes, but not. So it's actually written in what I'd have to say is a kind of modern language. I'm no way able to judge the accuracy or the compares with any other translation. So anyway, that's it. I just thought I have to do something. I have to, you know, I'll do some more reflections later. But if you are interested in Dante's Inferno, you can, and this is the first thing you've heard about it, you can go back and find the earlier cantos. And if you have been already interested in it, maybe this kind of a reflection will be of some interest to you. Anyway, look, thank you very much for listening. It's Paul O'Mahony reading Dante's Inferno for fun, saying cheerio for now. Bye-bye.